The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
I'm delighted to say Alan Quinlan is with us. Good morning to you, Alan. How are you getting on?
Morning, lads. Yeah, good, thanks. Bad weekend for me. Started on Thursday night. Burnley beating Liverpool. Then Leinster beat Munster and United beat us yesterday. So good for United fans and Leinster fans, but not certainly not for me.
How close are Munster to beating Leinster at the moment?
Well, it was their best opportunity, I think. They started the game really well. Defended brilliantly a couple of moments in that first half where Leinster were right in their line. So a lot of good stuff happening, but just some poor decisions then under pressure and at crucial moments during the game, and their discipline let them down. The line-out was average, so that scuppered a lot of their attack as well. So they're getting closer, I think. But Leinster just are still ahead and showed that on Saturday night. Didn't have their best performance, and Munster didn't allow them to play. So they did a lot of good things, Munster, but unfortunately just didn't have that ruthlessness and that killer instinct that's required when you're playing a top team.
I don't want to pick out any individual single mistake, but the missed kick and the decision to go for the kick just before half-time, if that goes over, it's 13-3 and it's half-time. It doesn't go over, it hits the post, it bounces down, Leinster go the length of the field, get a penalty, and instead of it being 13-3, it's 10-6. And it's a massive swing in the scoreboard and in the cup match, which it felt like, in many respects, it was just...
Yeah,
you can't miss those.
It was a huge swing. No, you can't. And I think, it wasn't so much the penalty coming off the post. I think it was a long-range kick, and it was... it wasn't a gimme, if you like. And it's just a reaction after that. Reece Marshall slides along the ground and was lucky it was only a penalty. I think he could have been yellow carded for that. Leinster kicked the touch and win the line out. And James Cronin gives away another penalty. And then Leinster kick it, Sexton kicks and it's 10-6. It probably could have been 13-3. At 10-3, if he missed the penalty and the ball went dead or something like that, you'd say, well, that's fair enough. It's not a bad return. But you just, when you're playing a good team like Leinster and you miss those kind of opportunities, and then you give them back 3 points, it was a massive, massive turning point in the game. And I think you could sense Leinster had an extra spring in their step. They were going in 4 points down as opposed to 10 points down. So in the end, it told. The game was only, they only won by 3 points. And look, the try, I think, is just a piece of brilliance, a little bit of luck. The ball sits up. Good decision from Ross Byrne. And it went in Leinster's favour there. And the offload from Keenan to Larmour was brilliant. Leinster have had a gripe about the line-out, which... I look back at it a good few times. It was crooked. That wasn't picked up. So, sometimes these things don't go for you. And they've certainly reason to be angry over that. But probably when they look back at the game and analyse it today, they'll look at other situations where they weren't clinical enough and they kind of reverted to type a little bit and probably went into safety mode a little bit. But I said this on Friday to Adrian. I said, if Munster ahead, they can kick the letter off the ball, but they were, after the try, they started box kicking again. Craig Casey came on and I know they were getting a return on that, but it wasn't going to win them the game. They needed to be smarter and try and keep the ball alive and even kick from the 10, look for some crossfield kicks or put a few up and unders in the middle of the field rather than working the touchline all the time. So it's down to confidence and self-belief as well. And I think they were probably shell-shocked after that Leinster try. And it was a game that, even though they made some mistakes, they probably, they had control of that game and they just lost control. And it shows that Leinster just have that strong mentality where they're never beaten. And they responded with that try and got the job done.
Did Tadhg Byrne do enough to get into the Ireland team?
Yeah, look, he was superb. I think he made a mistake at the end with the knock-on. That can happen to anyone. Dialende dropped one as well. He showed how effective he can be at the breakdown. And, his carry as an overall player were excellent. I think it was a top performance from him. Will he be selected? I don't know. Will you know, getting that balance right? James Ryan himself played there in 2 years ago when in over in Wales when Wales won the Grand Slam. You know, is he physical enough, big enough? Do we want a bit more grunt in the second? Or I don't know, but he'll certainly be in the match day 23. I think he's done enough to deserve a start because his form has been superb in the last few weeks.
Is he fighting for the sixth spot and is he up against CJ Stander essentially for that?
I think because he's played in the second row for Munster in the last few months and to switch him and drop Stander and put Ty Byrne in the back row would be a big call. It's certainly an option for them, but I think they'll still go with a back row of CJ Stander, Caelan Doris and Peter O'Mahony. So if he's going to start, it'll be in the second row or else he'll be on the bench.
Who are the other players then from Saturday night in particular that put their hands up? The squad's going to be announced in the next couple of hours. Hugo Keenan, they were talking about in yesterday's show. Matt Williams was saying he's somebody who plays error-free rugby. And I guess having come through a generation of Rob Kearney at fullback, that's what Irish supporters want from their fullback, first and foremost, is just error-free rugby. Is he well ahead now, do you think, in the battle with Larmer and Stockdale for the 15 jersey?
I think he should start at fullback, yeah. I think he's been superb and he's a very, very talented player and his aerial ability is very impressive as well. His decision-making, his energy. I think he starts at fullback for Ireland. I thought he played superb the other night. And he's just grown in confidence all the time. Jordan Larmer played really well in attack and looks so dangerous. Looks like that, you know, he's been out for a long time, but he has that ability to step people and ignite your attack and pop up and do something brilliant. And the worry and the concern is, you know, even playing on the wing with the amount of box kicking that happens in modern day rugby and even, in, you know, he will be targeted there. And that is the concern, the aerial ability.
He had three knock-ons in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, and just that dominance in the air, and I think that's the concern with Jordan Larmer. But can you afford to leave someone that good in attack out? We're crying out for tries and a bit of expansiveness and brilliance. And so that's something Andy Farrell have to weigh up. Does he take that risk to benefit the attack? Gary Ringrose was superb. And I thought Leinster, you know, they looked a little bit more clinical, even though they hadn't many line breaks and Munster defended well. They just looked like they had a little bit more guile, if you like, in those wider channels. Robbie Henshaw played really well, I think. And, you know, we'll probably see the same old. But I think the centre partnership will probably be Henshaw and Ringrose. They played really well the other night. I thought Henshaw was very, very effective and he looked sharp. And aggressive in his carries. And Luke McGrath was the other one for me. I thought he was superb. He was brilliant for Leinster under a lot of pressure. The ball was messy at times, but his distribution and effectiveness around the breakdown was brilliant. Conor Murray probably, you know, will hold on to that spot. He's played very well the other night. But Leinster looked that little bit more dangerous. Munster looked like they were trying to out-muscle them and physically they were very good, but the line-out is a massive concern for them. You know, you lose three or four line-outs in a big game like that. The turnaround that we spoke of before half-time and just lacking that little bit of subtle touch to kill off the game. I think if Munster had scored a try in that second half or even nudged a few penalties over the bar, I think they would have won the game. Even one penalty probably would have gotten there because... you know, they didn't score for 68 minutes of the game. And that's the concern when you're home and you're trying to turn the tide on your biggest rivals.
The line-out seems to be generally an issue in Irish rugby at the moment.
Yeah, I think, look, you have to give credit to James Ryan and, you know, Vardy and Doris and these guys, the pressure that they put on them. But, you know, Reece Marshall is a very good player around the field and normally his lineouts are fairly decent. But, you know, even some of the lineouts that Munster won the other night were pretty sloppy. And it is a frustration. I think people will question Stephen Larkin again and there's a few questions about the attack. And if Munster had won the game, all these things would have been just, they get masked over a little bit. But when you lose, you've got to look back at these moments and situations. They had a couple of attacking opportunities. Leinster stole lineouts and... I just think there's, you know, that's why Paul O'Connell is brought into the Irish setup, because it has been an issue for some of the teams, Leinster and Munster in particular. And Leinster got it right the other night, and they got in the air and stole possession off Munster, which caused them major problems and failed to ignite their attack. You know, I've always said that the line-out is crucially important to get your attack going.
Well, let's just tease that out a little bit, because I think from Leinster's perspective as well, they had a number of line-outs that they bobbled, and it looked like one got knocked on, but they got away with it. There was two or three where they were in attacking, and then all of a sudden it's a struggle, and it's like an arm wrestle. And when the line-out, which was crooked, and let's face it, that's actually a bad line-out, when they got away with that, they scored the try off it, and, you know, that took good skill and a little bit of luck for that to happen. The attacking play from both sides wasn't great, I think it's fair to argue. Now, how much does that to do with the fact that there's a snowstorm just before kickoff? It's absolutely freezing and the steam is rising off everybody. I don't know. I don't know what those conditions are like when the ball is greasy like that. Like, is it fair to criticise both sides for the attack not being great, or is that just the type of rugby that you should expect on a night like that?
You'd love to see an open, expansive game. I think the one back in August, when the rugby resumed, we saw great attack in that and a lot more free-flowing rugby. Conditions are obviously different. And it was difficult. It can be difficult to play in those conditions. So it was the type of game where both teams were trying to bring an intensity and an aggression, and you could see there was a fair bit of bite in it. The effort levels out of everyone. Nobody wants to lose this game. And I think Leinster sensed that, you know, maybe the media and people on the outside are saying, well, you know, fancying Munster to win this game. And I thought they would win it. I thought they were, you know, they'd kind of turned the corner and were ready to get a win against Leinster, which you haven't done in a couple of years. So maybe Leinster, you know, that added to their build-up as well. But I think they cancel each other out. Like, to be fair, defensively, both sides were spot on for most of the game. They were smashing each other. They were organised. They weren't over-committing at the breakdown. Numbers on their feet all the time. And there was a lot of, you know, a lot of big hits in the game. So, you know, you've got to give credit to both sides defensively. They kind of cancelled each other out. And there wasn't much space there. You would hope that you get some bit of a spark and somebody will be able to do something different and break a tackle and get a line break and get through. And we didn't see much of that. So you've got to give credit to both sides defensively, Ger, and they kind of cancelled each other out and negated that. But if you're losing lineouts and it's incredibly frustrating to watch and to be out there as well, particularly when Munster had a couple of great opportunities when they were in the attacking zone against Leinster, and they lost lineouts. And, you know, you ask about the, you know, you mentioned that lineouts have been a bit of a struggle. It's a struggle because it's sloppy, and that's the most frustrating thing. I know this for myself, you know, if you get a ball stolen and a lineout by a really good opposition who are putting bodies in the air, and, you know, the lineout, the throw-in is at full tilt, the jump is at full tilt. A lot of the mechanics of the lineup were right. Well, if the opposition steal it, you've got to say well done to them. And that's always, there's always a chance of that happening. But, you know, it wasn't, the throws were way too low. The execution was really poor at times. And you know, so both those factors kind of added to the lack of openness, if you like, in the game that we were all hoping to see. And it didn't really happen. And, you know, when Leinster are in that type of game, they always mention afterwards that they're not happy with their performance because they're a side who kind of judge themselves on being on the front foot, having quick breakdown, their attack being full of pace and tempo. And they really didn't really get that going the other night. And you know, you can give credit to Munster. They can take positives out of that. They weren't physically dominated. In fact, they were probably the team who were a little bit more physical, and they looked comfortable in that situation. But they've got to, if they want to, you know, beat Leinster, and maybe they will meet in the Pro 14 final, the way it's looking, and if they get to knockout stages of Europe, they've got to be more clinical. And look, when you're on a losing run too, sometimes these small margins, these things go against you. The line-out, if it's called up, Munster probably win the game. You know, Leinster can see it out at the end, and they did that really well because they're a shrewd, smart team. And Munster certainly look back with regrets in that performance.
Issues at the line-out haven't just been a problem for the provinces. It's been a problem for the national team during the autumn as well, which is one of the reasons that Paul O'Connell is there. Is it a quick fix? Is it something you think actually by the time Ireland go up against Wales in under 2 weeks' time that you will see some sort of an impact from Paul O'Connell, that even that sloppiness that you're talking about that's been there, that having a figure like O'Connell, such a master of the line-out, he can have that impact that Ireland need?
Yeah, I think you can fix this pretty quickly. You can't just suddenly bring in a raft of new players and expect it to make a difference. I think the players that are there are well capable of performing, and I just think he's going to put more emphasis on doing the basics really well and making sure there's a standard every time you go into a line-out, that the execution, the lift, the throw, the timing, all those things that are important. It isn't just one thing. For too long, people, the easy option is to blame the hooker. Obviously, if the throw is bad and it's low and it's not enough pace on the ball, it's very obvious. But sometimes the throw is good and the players and the pod don't get in the air quick enough. So, I'm sure, and the players have spoken about, you know, some of them have spoken publicly about being in contact with Paul. He'll have sent the video clips, he'll have watched a lot of the footage from their games in the last few months, and he'll have a plan and a structure to try and get them up to speed in the next 2 weeks and tell them what he expects of them when it comes to line-out time. Like I say, if you do all the basics right and the fundamentals right in the line, you can still lose a ball here and there. But when you're losing three or four in a match, it's massive. And go back to Ireland, England, November in the Nations Cup, Ireland lost four line-outs. You know, one of them was the cause of Johnny May going the length of the field, scoring a try. So it can be massive. It can win or lose a game for you. So I think there is enough time, Nathan, and he'll have a plan and a process, even though you have a short kind of window to get these things right. I think you pick a menu of lineouts and you tailor them to the opposition. So he'll have watched the Welsh players. He'll know about Alan Wynne-Jones and his ability. And, you know, it's about getting the space right in the lineout as well. And just being dominant, having really good body language there. And that's something Paul will try and get across. So I'd be hopeful it can get it right for the Six Nations.
Did anybody play themselves out of contention for Ireland?
Not really, I don't think so. I think, I think you know, you look at the performances of both players in the team, and nobody you could say who is a potential starter, you know, would have had a bad game. I think you'd love to see more of them have standout games, but I don't think so. I think Luke McGrath is certainly going to come into the equation. You know, he's been left out of the last number of squads, and like I say, he had a superb performance. Hopefully, Tadhg Furlong is going to be back involved with Leinster against Scarlets this week. That'd be a massive boost, because Andrew Porter has been kind of trudging away there for a long time, and he's been superb, to be fair. But I don't think anyone has played their way out of a team that you or I, Ger, could pick at this stage.
There's a huge risk involved in picking Furlong for the Six Nations on the back of the fact that he hasn't played enough rugby. Do you hope to give him game time towards the end of the Six Nations? Is that, like, you know, coming off the bench for 10 minutes here or there in the last two games? Is that as ambitious as we could be, even if he was to play to start or get 40 minutes next week?
No, I think you wouldn't be starting him against Wales, even if he comes and plays, even if he goes and plays next week against the Scarlets. I think you definitely have him on the bench. You'd have him in your 23. It depends about, you know, depends how much workload he's had in the last 2 weeks. I think he trained fully last week with Leinster. So obviously, if he's no repercussions and no setbacks, the training workload as well will be increased for him and tailored for him throughout the next couple of weeks. So it just depends. I'd be getting him back into the group as quickly as possible. You can imagine, you know, with 10 or 15 minutes to go, bringing Tadhg Furlong off the bench would be a massive boost for any side. So he has that quality. He's just got to be physically right. He's not probably physically fit to play 80 minutes of international rugby, but I'd certainly have him involved as soon as possible if he's given the clearance.
I think Rory O'Connor was making the point in The Independent this morning that one of the difficulties they have with Furlong and James Lowe, who are both coming back from injury, who both could play for Leinster at the weekend, is the bubble that's there around the national team now for COVID, that you need to be in early. So they'll probably have to work through some of the logistics around it as well to get that balance of they need Furlong to get game time, but can they get him into the camp then if he gets the game time a week before the Wales match?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I heard that they spoke about that. I'm sure they'll try and work out the logistics of it and get the players tested after if they're involved with Leinster. It's a complicated issue, Nathan, but they've got to try and find a way to get both those guys because, you know, James Lowe will certainly be a player that if he's fit and ready, will be in that squad as well. He gives you a different option on the wing. So hopefully they can sort that out. But, you know, in an ideal world, Andy Farrell would love to see both those players play against the Scarlets this week.
Yeah, and look, if they get game time against Scarlets, it's probably worth them getting that game time and then not being in the Wales squad, but in the squad after that. You know, this is definitely a long-term thing. On balance, Alan, how optimistic, having seen our two best teams who are going to be the backbone of the entire team that is going to play Wales in a fortnight, how optimistic are you feeling ahead of the Six Nations at the moment?
I don't know. I'm undecided. You would have loved to have seen more openness to the game at the weekend and free flowing rugby. I think obviously the intensity of the game and having that game under their belt and having that type of game under their belt was really important to Andy Farrell and the players as well. So they will have got a lot out of that. But I think there's still question marks about how physical we can be as a group. And the main one is the attack, taking opportunities, being ruthless in attack when we come up against teams. You know, you're going to go to Wales and the Cardiff to a team who are under massive pressure themselves, that a dreadful Six Nations. And, you know, they'll be looking at Ireland and they'll have plenty of hatred for Ireland. And it's a perfect opportunity for Wales to knock them off their horse. But if Ireland were to go to Cardiff, which they're capable of doing, and there'll be no crowd there, it takes away from the home advantage a bit and get a result there, well, it'll be an incredible start for them. And you know, they've France then in Italy. So they could, you know, after three rounds, I'd fancy if they beat Wales, I think they'll win their first three games. They'll win the next two. And then there's an opportunity, you know, beat Scotland at home and you've got England, or beat Scotland away, which we've done so regularly in the last 10-15 years. You know, you could set up a Grand Slam decider. That's probably wishful thinking, but I think they'll have to take one game at a time. I think it's an incredibly tough start for Ireland because given the desperation that Wales need to get it within themselves.
Yeah, it's all shaping up pretty nicely. Alan, good stuff. Thanks a million.
Cheers. Thanks, lads.
It's Alan Quinn, and then we're going to have Bernard Driscoll's depth chart for you on tomorrow's show.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.